Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Welcome everyone here to The Thriving Marriage. I'm Heather Choate and I'm here with Mark Johnston. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing better. I was feeling a little bit under the weather yesterday, but all better today. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, you bet. I was just telling Mark before we went live that I hope I'm articulate today because I'm a little sleepy. I've got a teething 8-month-old and not sleeping great.
I love my children, but you know, I'm happy to be past that stage.
Yeah.
So best of luck to you with that.
Awesome. So today we're going to be talking about healing chronic criticism and blame. And so just a couple questions here. This podcast is especially for you. If your spouse is criticizing things that you do, criticizing everything that you do, it feels like that, right? If you feel like you don't measure up, if you feel like you're not good enough in their eyes, if they're blaming you for things. And so we're going to help you today overcome this so you feel valued, you feel cherished, you feel respected by your partner, even if they're currently unwilling to work on the relationship with you. Okay. Before we get to that, though, we want to share our client win of the week. And this one was shared by one of our coaches here. Linda, and she shared about Patrick had a huge win. His wife decided to move back in this weekend. They're actively working on increasing their communication and spending a lot of time together having fun. Now listen to this part, okay? So that's where they are. Before he joined, she had her mind made up that she was done. He has made many healthy changes thanks to High Thrive, and his wife has joined him in being recommitted to the marriage. So I love to see where they started, you know, and I would say 90-95% of our clients would agree that their spouse has said, my spouse, they're done. They're checked out. They say, just move on. It's over. There's nothing you can do. And going from that place now to where they're increasing communication, spending time together, and even having fun is awesome, awesome progress. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. So let's go into criticism and blame. All right. So, Mark, we just want to get clear on what we're talking about. So, what, in your opinion, is criticism, especially chronic criticism, and why is it not a good thing?
Well, I like to gather ideas from other people, and the one that this word stands out because it's also one of the things that Dr. John Gottman says is one of the four horsemen of divorce, meaning that if this thing, criticism, and we can lump blame in there with it, but mostly criticism, if it's present consistently within a relationship, it's probably going to lead towards divorce. I also say that, this one in particular, it's often the beginnings of contempt, which is another one of these four horsemen. Basically being a sign that some negative beliefs are starting to set in. We can understand, okay, the experts say this is bad. Criticism, contempt, blame are bad. But what it represents is a negative view about your spouse. Given enough time, it's going to push them away. It's going to make them feel undervalued, unwanted, rejected, unappreciated, and it's just going to drive the two of you apart. The problem with this one in particular, it's not quite so blatant as, say, something like contempt, because there's a lot of justification for criticism in many cases. They might say, okay, well, I'm just being honest, or I'm just trying to tell them how it is. Or they might say, look, how are they going to change if I don't tell them what they're doing wrong? And to a certain extent, we do this a lot with our relationships. Many people with the kids, they'll they'll reprimand them. They'll criticize them if they're doing something they're not supposed to do. They'll say, you're not, you know, why are, you know, we all have those moments with our children where we say, okay, why did you do that? That sort of thing. And, you know, we punish them for that. But the bad part here is where it crosses that line, and you're not just giving feedback, but it's this negative sort of statement about who that person is or what the kind of values that they hold. That's why it's such a terrible thing.
Right. Also that idea of, you know, if I don't tell them to change, then how do they know what they're doing wrong? Right. Mm-hmm. So where does this blame and criticism really come from?
Well, I like to look at these problems in sort of a way that makes sense. You know, I like to do this with basically all problems, you know, whether it be anger or whether it be contempt or whether it be, you know, your partner who is stonewalling and not talking to you. Somewhere along the line here, there's probably a healthy desire. And in this case, it's an effort to make some change, but people are often doing it without really taking in responsibility for their own part with this problem, or they're not really just taking responsibility for the support that they might need to give. Now, I want to give the caveat here that there are occasionally, sometimes problems that are 100% the responsibility of one spouse or another, but as I said, the person criticizing, their responsibility then becomes there's a need to support the person who is struggling. And it doesn't really take into account those sort of situations. Basically the healthy desire here is a desire for change. Even further, we might even look further into some of the meaning here. It's a way to escalate a situation to feel better understood. Essentially, if nothing's happening, you say, okay, I want to let my partner know that I'm upset so that they will change. So you escalate it and you ramp up the criticism. But like I said, it's a healthy desire that is simply coming out wrong. They want something to be different.
Gotcha. So coming at it from a mindset perspective, and mm-hmm. I'll just be really honest here about kind of my family background without trying to blame or criticize anyone, but that there is a pattern of chronic criticism on one side of my family. And so I've seen the devastation that this causes and the damage. And it's kind of like stepping into that emotionally abusive kind of situation where it tends to perpetuate one generation after another, right? One child grew up constantly being criticized, put down, told they were never good enough. Nothing was ever right. They couldn't ever do anything. They weren't smart enough. They weren't pretty enough. They weren't whatever, right? They weren't well-behaved. They weren't a good kid, all these things. And then that perpetuates into the next generation and the next generation until we start to become aware of the pattern and to break it. So sometimes, like, what I see is that criticism comes from a lot of frustration about things not changing, like you said, and that they're wanting things to change. And so they feel like we need something to change, so I'm going to kind of escalate, like you said, so that they understand how big of a problem this is to me. And then they'll want to change and we'll fix this. So like you said, it's a healthy desire, but it's coming out wrong. In other instances, I've seen this, but do you see this, Mark, where it's a little bit even deeper, right? There's some deeper like stories, internal beliefs going on. I don't feel good enough and I don't feel secure in myself. And so what I've been taught is that I need to then go and criticize other people. I need to put them down and blame them and criticize them and judge them because that makes me feel a little more secure, or I could have a little more control when I don't feel control. I've heard it said that, I heard it said that the things that we judge in other people are the things that we're the most insecure in ourselves. Mm-hmm. So what is your experience with that?
Yeah, no, I think that's a very good point. And I think that starts dipping a little bit further into, an unhealthy sort of level of criticism, mm-hmm. where it's not just being frustrated about change, but it's representing like that insecurity about yourself. And yeah, I do see that. Typically this is, it's the same sort of dynamic that you might see with childhood bullies, where they are putting down other people in order to boost themselves up. Somewhere along the way, there is like a healthy desire to feel better about yourself in this case. And there just isn't the right tools or the right path to get what they're looking for. I would say that, in my opinion, that is dipping a little bit more into that more unhealthy realm of criticism, because now it's not just the other person wanting them to change. It's now, this unhealth in yourself and coming from a really unhealthy place yourself.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So what needs to be done to reverse this situation of this criticism and this blame going on?
Now, I don't like to pretend that criticism just comes from nowhere. Like we were saying, one of the desires here is a desire for change or a desire to feel better about yourself. And so, I do think that if you're going to really eliminate this from your life, you do need to look at those obvious and active sources of pain that need to be addressed. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, if you are criticizing your child because they're not doing schoolwork well enough, some support to help them with schoolwork. Or perhaps if it's something about yourself, and you're saying, I'm feeling very insecure. Well, you need to find some way to address that source of pain there so that there's less need to put other people down. But that's like step number one, because it's going to be really hard, even if you use some other strategies to cut out criticism, it's going to be really hard to steer away from that, especially if that's become a pattern in your life, if you're not really taking care of those practical parts. But in terms of short-term and long-term strategies, I really like short-term having more of a redirection towards what is wanted instead of what you don't like. Even within my own marriage, Jen and I have had to focus on this a little bit. And this is not a huge problem in our marriage, but even still, we have a very low tolerance for criticism. We're not, Jen and I are not confrontational sort of people. So we've had to really focus on this, and it's helpful. Basically, if I go to my wife and I complain about how we're not getting out the door on time, or I'm criticizing her on, she takes it as criticism that the house might be messy after a day of work, things like that, it becomes it smooths things out much quicker if I say, okay, it's really important for me to get out to this appointment on time, or I really want to work towards having a cleaner house. Why don't I help you with that? That really cuts through a lot of the tension. The long-term strategy is a much more complicated sort of solution, but it involves really building up an atmosphere of fondness and appreciation. And if you are able to sit in sort of that spot with, appreciating your spouse, finding the things that you enjoy about them, actually being, actually liking your spouse, it's much less likely that you're going to have that criticism come up. But yeah, that's kind of the broad overview, what would have to happen, even though each of those steps might be very complicated. Those are the things that are needed.
Okay, I like that. We've got a short-term strategy, right? Redirection towards what is wanted. And then the long-term solution of focusing on fondness and appreciation and building up what you're grateful for about your spouse and creating that really synergistic energy, right? In a lot of the work that I do, choose your energy. Like, do you want to have contention, right? Do you want this negativity, this cycle of it's spiraling downward, right? And then we often talk about how to get it to spiral upward in the same way. It's taking the same opportunities, but looking at them in a different way, focusing on a different thing, focusing on what's wanted, focusing on appreciation. And that's what gets the horse going in the other direction. So yeah, I like that. Awesome. So can we give some examples of this? Can we get like tangible with this and help people, like if they're really stuck in this, sometimes it's hard to see how it actually applies.
Yeah, I'm thinking of a situation with one of the clients that I'm working with where her husband has said, you know, to her it was a surprise, but said suddenly that that he wanted a divorce. This is the state that a lot of our clients find themselves in. And what she noticed is, you know, after he said this, a lot of criticism started to creep into their interactions. He started to criticize how she wasn't supporting him, you know, perhaps making his lunch for the day, or wasn't, you know, helping around with his work. They had a family business, and she wasn't helping him with the family business as much as he wanted. And she was a little bit perplexed by this because, you know, a lot of what was going on, she felt like she was supporting her husband. She felt like she was helping out with the family business. And so where this started going is, you know, I started helping her to introduce some of these interventions that I mentioned here. She started to notice the things that her husband was doing for the family, started to appreciate him more, started to actually be vocal about it. She started to stop him when he actually was criticizing her. And she set some boundaries there. She said, okay, look, you're not going to speak to me like that. But she redirected it towards what he's actually wanting. Mm-hmm. So in one instance, I think that it was about how her and the kids were just sitting around while he had to work late with something with the family business. And she said, he started to criticize them about being lazy. And she said, hold on, you're not going to talk to us like that. Do you need some help? He says, well, yeah, exactly what I'm saying. And so she even clarified it further. She said, I had no idea that you were going to work late tonight. You didn't tell us that was the case. Do you want us to work? If that's what you want, that's all you have to tell us. You don't need any of this. And he stopped for a minute and he apologized. You know, calling him out on that, you know, worked in that situation. But in these, it cut the criticism immediately, and they were actually able to get towards what he wanted. He wanted his family to help him. He wanted something to be different here. He wanted to feel a little bit more supported. And as soon as that was identified, and all the criticism, all the tension just immediately dropped.
That's awesome. I love that. So you mentioned boundaries and how she had to put in some boundaries. So let's talk about that, especially if we're really trying to, you know, talk about what's wanted and increase some appreciation, increase, you know, some fondness for each other. But despite everything that we're doing, there's still a lot of criticism that we feel is coming our way. So, Mark, I'm curious, in your marriage, have you ever had to set up a boundary with
No. Jen? Yeah, that's an interesting question. I tend to, you know, I think very highly of my wife. And there's very rarely a time where she's critical of me. I'm struggling to even find that. But I do know that there's been times where, you know, like when I'm under a little bit more stress, I have my own favorite unhealthy behaviors. You know, and I think everyone does. And I, at times, I'll lean a little bit more towards some anger, or at times some criticism will come out. And I do know that Jen sometimes does have to stop me, just, you know, much like the example that I was given with my client, she'll have to stop me and say, okay, hey, look, let's stop this right here. And, you know, let's actually talk about what's wanted. And, you know, Jen and I have the kind of relationship that works well. We did have to work up towards that. I can remember many years where, you know, I don't want to paint this picture like I'm this often angry or often critical sort of person, but, you know, that's it would pop up here and there. And in previous years, Jen would just kind of sit with that, and she'd be angry that or upset that I had gotten angry and I had not reacted well and wouldn't actually bring it up. And it's gotten to be a much better situation where she's able to speak up and let me know if I've crossed that line where it's painful. And, you know, I take that feedback really well and make some adjustments in those times when I am more stressed. And I do let some of that anger come out somewhat. How about you, though? I know you've talked a lot of, you know, I imagine you have some good stories here. Heather. You were just talking about family situations and whatnot. Have you or Ben had to really stand up and set some boundaries concerning blame or criticism or any of the stuff we're talking about today?
Yeah, I was actually talking about this with Ben this morning. And Ben is not critical. Like, he is not one to be critical or do the blame game very much and those kind of things. So that part was a little harder to find, but he said he did remind me of some boundaries that we had to put in place for his family. And specifically, like, okay, so as I've mentioned before, like, the deeper insecurity, I'm not good enough. If I'm not good enough, then people are going to leave me, right? Mm-hmm. So my insecurity made his family and the amount of time that he spent with them, because he has a large family, he's one of 13 kids, and he's very close to his 8 brothers. And so, as you can imagine, there's a lot of drain there, energy. And when you first get married, we were talking about, like, so when you first get married, you really don't have a lot of boundaries, right? You're just so in love and you don't really, you know what triggers the other person, know what's not okay with the other person. And you kind of set out and then you uncover these things, right? We can't be married to someone without bumping into each other or sometimes crashing into each other and causing some conflict and some friction, you know? Mm-hmm. And so having to put in those boundaries, like, when you get home from work, I would appreciate it if you didn't go and spend 2 hours talking to your brother instead of coming and talking to me, you know, because that made me feel insecure. Like, I'm not good enough. He doesn't want to spend time with me. It created a lot of insecurity in myself. I had to work on that insecurity as well, but I also had to put in a boundary. Like, this is what I feel like I need to feel connected with you. This is what I feel like I need to feel significant and important to you, because right now I don't feel significant. So, like you said, the very first step of setting in, of solving these kind of challenges. And I'll admit, this is a kind of a more benign one compared to what I know some of our clients go through and what some of our audience goes through. But the principles still apply. And I've learned these from you, Mark, is that I feel this way because it makes me feel this way. And he's like, okay, that I'm not intending for you to feel that way. So going there to that first step is, you know, identifying what the pain point really is and what the goal actually is. Is the goal is that we both want to make each other feel significant and connect with each other. And if this is an obstacle to that, you know, your tendency to go and talk with your brothers or whatever it is, or stay out to 3 a.m. without saying goodnight to me. That was another one. then it was something I needed to express, and I could do it in healthy ways and very unhealthy ways. And I did both. And I will tell you that the healthy ways are always more effective. So doing it in a calm manner, expressing how I feel rather than just getting upset or shutting down emotionally or blaming him and getting, you know, like, it just creates a very negative cycle when you go about it that way. But then when you just express what you're feeling and come up with a goal that you can both work towards, that's how you de-escalate the situation and actually solve those root issues that are going on there.
I think this is a really good place for those, what I consider very cliche I statements. You know, you might've heard, if you've read any sort of relationship books or books on, you know, better communication, you've probably come across the I statements. And you mentioned several points here, like, you had to really think about, okay, what is it that you are feeling? And you had to share that with Ben. And, you know, for those of you who aren't aware of what I'm talking about here, I statements, it's basically you expressing how you feel. So you might say, I feel this. And you don't cross the line in terms of what the other person is doing to you or how they feel and, you know, describing their motivations. You're only really talking about yourself. It's a typical strategy for helping partners to communicate better or to really just get their feelings out without a lot of this blame or criticism coming out. So you were describing the situation, Heather. What do you think was the key sort of factor that made these situations go well? Why didn't it, you're talking about how you're able to share that with Ben. You know, why didn't it turn into a yelling match, or why didn't one of you just shut down as soon as some of these complaints came out?
Right. Well, on the unhealthy side, that's exactly what would happen, right? Is that I would say, you know, you did this, and it was the blaming, right? So something negative to me happened, something made me feel insecure or insignificant or not valued. And so I would say, you did this. This is your fault, right? And that would just turn into the blaming game, right? And then he would shut down emotionally. And then there we were with a bigger problem. And so learning how to say, instead of blaming, you know, you did this, and now I didn't get a good sleep because I was up all night worried about where you were or whatever. I was worried about, you know, what you guys were doing, or that I wasn't good enough or whatever, right? So instead of that, saying, like, going into the how do I feel and what do we actually want? So really getting clear on that. For me, I had to learn how to emotionally process through some things and how to let go of some of that insecurity and that defensiveness internally, which is something that we teach our clients how to do. It's something that we're normally not taught, especially if you grew up in a household where there was a lot of criticism and there was a lot of blaming and a lot of volatileness or explosiveness and unhealthy forms of communication, unhealthy ways of solving problems. You aren't taught how to do that. So we need to learn those skills, because you can learn them no matter what your background was. And there are things that we can learn. And so, yeah.
Now, from your perspective, like the way you were telling this, like sometimes blame or criticism was coming from you, but I think a lot of our audience or our clients are also coming from this angle where their spouse is the one that's more critical and blaming.
Right.
And like you said, Ben is not a very critical person. My wife Jen is not a very critical person either. So, you know, but I do remember a story here. Where I did have to deal with a very critical person. There's a number of people here, but, you know, a very poignant example was this situation where I was working at, this is probably now 15 years ago, I think, where I was working at a rehab center. And that evening I was helping out with some of the as towards the front, where the, you know, people would come in the door. And at one point this mother and daughter came in, and the daughter was obviously intoxicated. So the mother, you know, she brought her to the rehab center. The obvious solution, right? So she wanted her daughter to get some help. Well, part of the criteria for admitting someone into the rehab center is they had to actually agree to be admitted into the rehab center. Mm-hmm. And our rules were such that if they were too intoxicated, we couldn't admit them, because they couldn't, you know, they couldn't actually think about what that choice meant. So we actually had to turn this person away, because as odd as it sounds, they were too intoxicated to be at the rehab center. And the reason why I bring this up is at that moment when I had to let the mom know about this decision, the mom became extremely, extremely upset. And she started yelling at us. She was saying what a horrible person I was. How could I do this to someone? When obviously she was struggling, you know, she said things like that I was heartless. She used many swear words to describe the kind of person that I was. So, I mean, this is a very heated moment, right? Where there's a lot of criticism and blame. Apparently I was the one that was going to ruin her daughter's life. That was what was being said. Now, the big thing that has served me well in working in these kind of jobs is, you know, I don't let myself be bothered or flustered, you know, and this is a very different situation. I did not have a lot of connection with this woman, whereas it's very different if this is your spouse coming at you. Okay. But I think the principles still apply. We were talking about boundaries here, and I think it's really important to actually talk about what is helpful in going about setting these boundaries. You know, Heather, you were talking a lot about, in these cases, using those I statements, describing how you feel. And I think one of the big important factors is understanding. Whether your partner is criticizing because they want change or because they're feeling insecure about themselves, I think it's really important to, you know, help everyone involved to, you know, how to be able to express how do they feel and what do they need. And I want to really emphasize these two questions for everyone that's listening, because these are two very, very important questions in setting boundaries or in dealing with criticism and dealing with blame. I tell my clients over and over and over again, you know, to use these two questions in dealing with tension and dealing with a lot of communication problems. Just how do I feel? What do I need? And allowing both of you to express this. So I asked, you know, I started trying to understand this woman. I said, okay, she wasn't going to express this herself. So I said, okay, seems like you are really scared for your daughter. I said, you know, I was starting to help her feel understood. I was actually expressing how I thought that she felt. You know, this is just something that this is one of my superpowers, is to be able to take these tense moments and to apply some empathy. And she immediately after I said this, I remember it very clearly. Immediately as I said, you know, I can see that you're really scared for your daughter. Like the tension immediately just dropped. And she said, yeah, I'm really scared for my daughter. I said, okay, you really need a way to get your daughter some help. And she said, yeah, you're really frustrated that, you know, I'm telling you that you can't admit your daughter. And she's just kept agreeing with me. And as soon as I started going about this, the anger, the yelling, the blame, the criticism, just, it went away. And so that's, you know, that's what I'm talking about here. You know, when we're talking about boundaries, there's a lot of things that can be done even before you have to start setting some boundaries. I think boundaries are important. And this is why in our PATH program, one of the very first principle, the P stands for perspective. I talk a lot about understanding and empathy. You'll probably hear Heather and I talk about this on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
But it's these sort of things, you know, having that understanding that can often cut right through a lot of this, a lot of these tense, critical moments.
I would agree that having understanding towards your spouse, what they're feeling, where they're coming from, what insecurities they might have, why this is coming up for them, and also having some understanding for yourself. For me, it was like I had a block inside myself, like I'm not supposed to feel negative things. And so I wouldn't really recognize it consciously, but I knew I felt it. And so having understanding towards myself and saying, it's okay that I feel upset. Like that for me was a big breakthrough when I realized it's okay that I'm upset about this because, you know, it's crossed some kind of boundary or it's hurtful in some way. And so what do I really need, right? And so having understanding even for yourself and saying, it's okay that I feel this way and it's okay that I actually express it in a healthy way was transformational for me. So if anyone else is struggling with that, I know what that's like.
Yeah, I agree completely with that. Like, it's one of the best things and one of the nicest things that my wife does for me is, like I said, you know, if I'm stressed, I will lean a little bit towards anger sometimes. And my wife very rarely will, you know, very rarely will she not be understanding. Instead, she makes it a point to basically say exactly what you said right there, Heather, that it's okay to be upset, and tries to help me, you know, understand, okay, why, or she tries to understand, okay, why is Mark upset? Maybe there is something that needs to be taken care of here. And as soon as like she starts from that approach, I'm like, okay. And I'm able to back off a little bit from some of those upset feelings, and I'm able to say, okay, here's Jen who's trying to understand me. I can calm down.
Right. So instead of taking their anger as like a threatening thing or something that you feel super defensive about, find out what's underneath that, because then it takes all that defensiveness and that tension way down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
exactly.
Let's talk about compromise. So we've got the understanding piece. We're asking, how do I feel? What do I need? How do they feel? What do they need? Right. Mm-hmm. To kind of get what's underneath this blaming, this criticism. And then let's talk about compromise as another piece there of setting a healthy boundary.
Yeah. So what we're talking about here is there are three really essential parts to the boundaries. And like Heather was saying, you know, like there's that understanding piece. And you'll hear us over and over again, as I was saying before, and a lot of our solutions, that understanding piece is almost always going to be the first, you know, thing that we try. So once you know what it is that's wanted, how you're feeling, and the same thing for your partner, if you're trying to set a boundary, it's always best to start looking for that compromise first. How do you actually both get what you want, and what are some healthy ways to get there? Now, this is a secret tip, because I'm sure a lot of you out there are saying, okay, there isn't any compromise. My husband or my wife wants a divorce and I don't. You know, you might say, okay, I need to set a boundary here. I'm going to stand for my marriage. I'm going to make them work on the marriage. And there's no compromise here. But my tip here is, if you can break your goal down into its most basic pieces, it typically makes it much easier to agree on. In other words, you need to focus less on how you're going to get what you want and focus more on what is wanted on a basic level. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, something that when I kind of realized this, it really made a huge difference. And you might say, okay, well, what do you mean here, Mark? Because if my spouse wants a divorce and I don't, isn't that just kind of the end of things? Well, what I tell my clients over and over again is divorce is not really a goal in and of itself. No one sets out a goal for divorce just because divorce sounds like this great thing. It's not an end goal. It's a means to an end. It's a way to get to a goal. And so, you know, when we break this down, we might say, okay, this person wanting a divorce actually wants more respect. They want to feel heard. They want to feel safe, or they want to, you know, whatever it wants, they're wanting. When we break down their goals, we get a better understanding of what is wanted, and we can focus a little bit less on how we get there. So how we get there, you know, your partner might be saying, I want a divorce, but what they actually want is these other things. So, I don't mean to put you on the spot, Heather, but can you think of like if you can't, that's fine. Can you think of an example of something like this, how you might break down a really tense goal?
Okay. So I can think of a client, I'll keep it anonymous, but her husband was having an affair and said, I'm not happy here. So I want a divorce. I want to be with this other woman. And so that was not the goal, right? And so if you're just trying to like look at, you want to be with another person and I want you to stay with me, like you said, you can't really break it down into its smaller parts to find some kind of compromise. But when we uncover what was really going on there, his motives was that I don't feel significant. I don't feel like you even need me. I don't feel like you care about me. You've been really emotionally checked out from me. And so I found this other woman and she makes me feel significant. She makes me feel needed. And I know she does need me, and that makes me feel good. And so I don't want to be with someone that's just emotionally withdrawn from me and feels, I believe he said, like emotionally dead, like a zombie. And so I'm going to go be with this other person. And so in that kind of case, what we're doing there is breaking it down to what's actually wanted, right? What's wanted on the basic level is that she wants the security of having her husband. She wants to feel significant. She wants to feel respected. She wants to feel safe and secure. He wants to feel emotionally connected and needed and significant, right? And so when we look at those kind of basic pieces of what's needed, then we're able to focus on how do we get that? how do I help you feel more needed here? How do I feel more emotionally supportive to you? And how do I also feel safe and secure in this situation? So that's the first thing that comes to my mind.
I have another example. I want to go back to my example at the rehab center. So here was this woman who was yelling and screaming and putting all sorts of criticism out there. And as soon as, like I said, as soon as we started introducing some understanding, that tension dropped. Now, how we ended up, so basically I was setting this boundary. I was saying, okay, we can't admit this woman into the rehab center. So and this other woman, she wanted her daughter admitted. We might say, okay, there's no actual compromise here. The both goals are at cross purposes. But when I got to the point where I understood, okay, this woman is feeling scared for her daughter. She wants her daughter to get some help. She wants her daughter to be safe because she's concerned about how intoxicated she is. So when I understood what she wanted, I couldn't admit her, but she wanted her daughter to get some help. I was able to give her some suggestions. I said, okay, what you need to do is you need to go take your daughter home. She wasn't in, critical condition or anything like that. She was just very drunk. And I said, okay, you need to go get her some food, help her to sleep this off. I said, hey, look, what I can do here is I can ensure that when you come back in the morning after your daughter is sobered up a bit, I can ensure that there's going to be a spot for your daughter because the spots were a bit tight. By making a compromise saying, hey, we can't admit her now, but here are some solutions to help your daughter right now, and you can absolutely get some help in the morning. Well, there wasn't really any need for me to go to the third part of boundaries, which is a consequence. If you are offering this understanding and you both feel very well understood and you are putting out these compromises where you can potentially both get what you want and your partner still isn't working with you, this is where we get into that realm, Heather, where we're talking what most people think of as boundaries. And it's really, really just one piece of it. It's just the consequences. So, Heather, I mean, you know how we work here. Do I like to go to consequences a whole lot? I don't like to go to this stage of boundaries. I think in many cases it's not really necessary. If both people are really, especially if both people are calm about the situation, there's very little need to go to consequences. It's only really when the other person has no interest or is unwilling to help you get what you're looking for.
After you've done the first two.
Yes. yes. And as we stress over and over and over again, you have to come at it with some understanding. You have to come at it from understanding for your partner. If they don't feel understood, they're not going to compromise. And they are certainly going to be very critical of any consequences that you might be putting in their way.
Right. It will backfire if you do.
Oh, right. Yeah. It's just simply going to push them further away. Absolutely. Absolutely will.
So how do we do it the right way?
So, okay. The right way to go about consequences is to ask yourself this question. How do I get what I need, even if my partner isn't going to work with me? And the reason why I word the question like this, it's the consequences should never be punishment. It should not be vengeful. It should not be, it should always be something that you have control over. Because if you're saying the consequence, if you're not going to stop the affair, then I'm not going to let you go out with the guys anymore. Because I don't know if you're going to be out with her instead. If you're talking about this hypothetical affair situation. Well, the reality is that sort of situation, you have no control over your spouse when you really think about it. If you're creating the situation where you are punishing them, it gets all sorts of messy. It creates these power differentials where you are like almost like a parent. It feels controlling, and it will drive your spouse further away. So it's always, how do I get what I need even if my partner isn't going to support me? And if you're kind of following that guideline, then the consequence is probably appropriate.
Okay. Do you have a specific example that we
can... Oh, that would be good. That would be good. I was just like, okay, here's my point. I'll just leave that point out there.
Yeah. I have one from my personal life, but I'd really like to see it more applied in a marriage situation.
Sure. I'm thinking of, you know, I help my clients with this all the time. I'll have to, you know, while I'm explaining this, I'll have to kind of rack my brain for a personal example. But in terms of relationships, so I'm thinking of a client of mine whose spouse has had multiple affairs. Mm-hmm. Now, we tried in this situation to approach it with some understanding. We said, okay, why is this person continually having affairs? And we had some understanding for that. Her husband was, you know, in my opinion, probably would have qualified for a clinical depression, a major depressive disorder diagnosis. But, you know, beyond that, you know, there's just simply very little respect in the home. This is, you know, understanding for my client, but the person having the affairs, he was unhappy. He thought very little of himself. And so he would go and seek validation about how great he was by being with other women. So there's some compromise. Basically, she, you know, we got to a point where my client was saying, okay, if you don't stop the affairs, we're going to get some help. I want to support you with this and getting some help. I would like the affairs to stop. He didn't want to do that. So the consequence here is, you know, and I don't always recommend this, but in this case I did. I said, okay, there needs to be a separation. Mm-hmm. He kept going to go stay with other women. You know, he might be gone for several days at a time, and then he'd come back home. And I said, okay, you need to not let him come back home. And she hemmed and hawed over this. She said, oh, this was too difficult. You know, isn't this going to push him away? And sure enough, you know, this was basically, I set this consequence because my client did not feel secure. She didn't know whether she felt often rejected. She felt like she wasn't good enough. So she wanted to feel better about herself. She wanted to know, like, have some stability in her life, know what the plans were, because the husband would come home and would complain when she wasn't there for him. So we setting this consequence to make sure that she felt more secure, more confident in herself, make sure that she could have her own plans and her own life. And the setting this consequence, not letting him come back home, oddly enough, you know, at first, he really hated this. He said, you're rejecting me. Why do you have to push me away? Why are you being so mean? You know, he was putting this out on her. And I said, okay, you need to keep the boundary. Now she kept the boundary. Oddly enough, he started to apologize. He started to take responsibility. He started to admit that he needed to get some help. And that situation kept going such that, you know, he started getting some help, and, you know, it basically the setting these boundaries was a huge turnaround in this situation.
Right. Yeah. I think we'll leave it at that. I did have a personal one, but I think that covers it really well. So yeah. I love that. All right. So let's just do a quick recap of the three elements of putting in a healthy boundary would be understanding first. Yeah. You cannot jump to consequences before you have understanding. Many people do that, and that's why it backfires. Then when you have understanding, how do they feel? How do I feel? What do they need? What do I need? You go into compromise. How do we both get what we want? And breaking it down into smaller, basic pieces. And then if that is still, if they're still unwilling to work with you at that point, and you've done both of those things, then putting in some healthy consequences to make sure that you're focusing on getting your basic emotional needs met. And it's not a punishment, it's not vengeful, but it is a protection that needs to happen at that time.
When I learned— I want to make one further point with that. I'm sorry, the story with the separation, when the husband wanted to come back, I suggested that she go back to those compromises. She said, I need to feel safe and secure. If you want to come back, then I need you to do some things. And that's why he started to agree, because she gave a path for him to get what he was looking for. But anyways, yeah, those three pieces.
Once then you're cut off forever. And so this is here until this happens so that I can feel safe and secure. And then we can start to work on that. I love that. That's awesome. All right. So now let's go into our marriage mythbuster. We're totally changing gears here.
Yeah.
So, marriage mythbuster of the doghouse.
So yes. I wanted to discuss this because I think this is a huge misconception, fairly common. At least I perceive that it's common. I'm not going to name names, but I know many people personally that have been, that they'll even call it the doghouse. Their spouse will call it the doghouse.
They'll joke about it.
They're like, oh yeah, my husband's sleeping on the couch tonight. So the fact that we can kind of smile and say, yeah, that happened. We all kind of get that this happens a lot. And you know, it's basically the saying that someone is in trouble, and typically means that they are kicked out of the bedroom. They might be sleeping on the couch, and everyone kind of jokes about this, kind of thinking this is just kind of part of marriage. You get upset at each other, and someone is going to be in the doghouse. And I'm going to say, do not do this. The big problem with this myth that the doghouse is an acceptable way of dealing with problems is it, you know, one, it communicates rejection. Two, it creates a power difference within the marriage. One spouse is in the position where they are punishing the other spouse, and that is not a situation you really want to be in. If you want a happy, healthy marriage, it needs to become from this point of mutual understanding, mutual benefits, you know, mutual or equal power. It's a completely one-sided situation. I've seen cases where this is becomes a routine, that when there are fights that happen, the default is someone is in the doghouse. And eventually that continual rejection and power difference turns into distance, lack of communication, a withdrawal from the marriage, and you know, onward and onward. So, you know, the reason why I brought it up here in this podcast today is it fits right in with criticism, blame, and boundaries, all of that. Those, using the strategies that we talked about today, about, you know, having more understanding, you know, redirecting things towards what is wanted, fostering an atmosphere of fondness and appreciation, it kind of kills the need for the doghouse and the risk that it presents in creating more distance in your marriage.
Love that. Yeah, one night we were out with friends, and my husband's a joker. Like, he will say things that can be taken very wrong, but he does it for, you know, good fun. And he's working on that, you know, sarcasm and stuff like that. We were out with friends, and he had said something about me that I was just like, the blood just like drained from my face. And I was like, oh, wow, that one actually really hurt. And the friends were like, oh, you're in the doghouse. And I just like, wait, no. If he's in the doghouse, then I'm going to go in the doghouse with him until we both get out, right? Because I'm not going to be like playing that game. To me, it's not funny. I understand where this is like common notion, but like Mark said, it does lead to power struggles. And I don't ever want to feel like I'm punishing you because you did this to me in public and it was offensive. It's no, I'm more like, I'm going to communicate with you later in the night. That one actually went too far. And so that one hurt, and here's how I feel, and here's what I want, is I want to feel respected, and that one what did not feel respectful to me, right? And so I communicate with that with him, and he realizes that's not what I really want to do. I'm sorry, right? And I won't do that again, and be more sensitive in the future. So
yeah, created a much better situation, and he didn't have to escalate it and say you're in trouble now, Ben, or anything. Yeah, so it
was right. Awesome. So if you find that this has been helpful for you, and you know, maybe that you're still really struggling with these things, maybe there is chronic criticism, chronic blame going on, and it's perpetuating and heading in the wrong direction. If you want help with any of these that you heard today or anything else that you're dealing with in your marriage, we would love to have you book a strategy call with us. These are a complimentary consultation where we can show you exactly where you're at right now and the solutions to get where you really want to be. Even if, you know, your spouse is wanting a divorce, even if they're completely checked out, even if they're having an affair. Or we also encourage you, if coaching isn't a great solution for you, to join one of our courses. And you can find those over at
highthrivecoaching.com.
Thank you.
There we are.
Here we are, like 60 something podcasts in, and I can't even get our own website right now.
Oh, yeah. You know, I get it. Some days my brain just doesn't work quite right when I want it to. And I think this is one of those days, just one of those days.
We've got a live user that, person following us here says, can't wait for your call tomorrow. So that's awesome. And then another person tore down the doghouse because it's disrespectful and demeaning. Awesome. I love that. So thank you all for joining us. Thank you, Mark, for sharing some incredible insights that have blessed not only my life, but many, many others. I encourage you that if you're struggling with these things, just put them to the test. Put it to the test and see if it doesn't bear good fruit for you. So next week, we're going to share with you how to overcome the story, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. Every single masterclass I do, this one always comes up. So if you've heard this, you are not alone. So we are going to go into solutions for the I love you, but I'm not in love with you story that your spouse has next week. Thanks so much, Mark. And thank you, everyone, for joining.
See you, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.